Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Inside. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. California has reopened. Summer is just days away, well, officially anyway. As the weather warms, those of us who've been quarantined for the better part of the past year may be eager to hop on a plane and get a change of scenery, cooler temperatures, maybe a drink with an umbrella in it. Wouldn't blame you. In a few minutes, what you need to know if you're catching a flight out of Sacramento International Airport. And here's a hint, bring a mask. And how much of an increase of passenger traffic has the airport seen since vaccines started rolling out? And when will things really get back to normal at the airport? We're going to answer all of those questions and plus have some exciting news about a couple of new nonstop routes. But first, is it hot enough for you this week? I mean, it's only 9:06 in the morning and the temperature in Sacramento is already 81 degrees. Stockton, it's 82 degrees. Modesto, 81 degrees. As well. There will be a little escape from the excessive heat over the next few days. The coast, while cooler, will be relatively warm as well, but certainly nowhere near what we are going to experience here in the valley and the foothills. And these are extreme temperatures arriving earlier in the season. As we mentioned, it's still technically spring. So to help us understand what exactly is going on is Craig Shoemaker, senior meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Sacramento. Welcome to Insight, Craig.
Thank you, Vicky. We have a really strong area of high pressure that's spreading north over Northern California from the Four Corners Desert Southwest region. It's going to bring temperatures today approaching 110 degrees at many locations in the valley. It will be the hottest day of the year. This type of heat happens usually only once or twice a year. The last time we were this warm was last August when it was 112. I think it was August 16th or so. We're getting close to what would be also all-time June records for many locations. For instance, Sacramento downtown, we're forecasting 109 today. The overall June all-time record is 112, so we're within a couple of degrees of that. 102 is the daily record, so we're almost certainly going to break that. So it is really a dangerous heat. It's really going to be worsened by the fact that it's going to be cooling off only very little at night, with lows generally in the upper 60s to low 70s across the valley, even warmer as you head up into foothill locations where we get a thermal belt there. So we really want to ask people to avoid any outdoor activities really between about 4 and 7 o'clock tonight. That'll be the peak heating time. When those temperatures will be approaching 110.
Yikes. I mean, yeah, and when you talk about the overnight temperatures being in the upper 60s, lower 70s, that really isn't a lot of relief. You also were mentioning the thermal belt in the foothills. What exactly is that?
Yeah, that is an area of warmer air that the hot air that we get basically in the valley, it shifts up the mountain and up into the foothill areas. During the evening, so we get the sort of the we have the kind of upslope flow that happens during the day, and that pushes that heat up into the foothills area, and then it sort of just gets stuck up there at night, and there's not as much cooling there. You know, cool air sinks, so the cooler air comes down into the valley, and we're stuck with a layer of warmer air. It's sort of the leftover hot air that we had in the valley that sort of just sticks there over the foothills area in the evening and overnight hours.
You're painting a very desirable picture with that vocabulary. This isn't just happening here, right? This is happening like all over the West, and it's not just California.
Yes, it's especially over Arizona, Utah. Kind of the desert southwest area, and on up into southern Oregon. It does cool off a little bit as you head up into the Pacific Northwest areas, and they'll cool down a little quicker. It's going to stay hot, really, you know, even though today will be the hottest day. It's still going to be very hot tomorrow, only maybe a degree or two cooler tomorrow. We're forecasting 108 here at Sacramento tomorrow. That very likely will again break a record. A little bit cooler into the weekend. We'll cool down maybe the low 100s. We're talking like 102, 103 on Saturday and Sunday. Maybe a little more cooling as we head into Monday and Tuesday, where we could get back to around 90. And that's still a degree or two above normal for this time of year. It will seem cooler, but it is still pretty warm.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll take what we can get. You know, the relative coolness if when we're dealing with such hot temperatures today and through the weekend. In addition to Sacramento, what other hot spots in our area that you're focusing on? Will Sacramento be the hottest, or are there some other areas that will even be hotter?
Yeah, the hottest temperatures we're expecting to be up around Redding and Red Bluff area, Northern California. 111 is what we're forecasting up there both today and tomorrow. That north end of the valley tends to run a little bit warmer a lot of times than down here over the southern Sacramento Valley, especially when we get a little bit of a light northerly wind, and that's what we'll have. They get a little bit of help from some downslope from the southern Cascades they're running down. So they'll be just a degree or two warmer, but we're splitting hairs. It's going to be hot all up and down the valley, really.
You know, earlier this morning, we were seeing reports of trees falling in Midtown Sacramento. What role does heat have to play in when it comes to the trees throughout Sacramento?
I'm not sure that there's really much of a role of heat. I mean, it could be, you know, usually trees are more impacted by wetness or dryness or, wind. We haven't had any strong wind the past few days to weaken those trees. So really don't think weather probably played a big role in those trees coming down. I'm not sure exactly, it just might have been naturally they were ready to fall. Usually wetter conditions leads to trees falling. Usually the drier it is, it's not, that wet conditions usually mean the soils are looser and you would expect trees to fall a little more. So I'm not sure that there was a big impact from the heat temperatures in that.
Well, that's good, because that was a question that came into us just before we started. So I thought I'd throw it at you. Talking about the dry temperatures, and we haven't had strong winds, which is good. But I mean, these hot, dry temperatures are also a factor for wildfires. What I would imagine that's an overarching concern as well.
Yes, definitely. It's really the dryness that we're having during the afternoon hours. We're seeing a relative humidities fall below 10%, some places down as low as 5%. So with those low of relative humidities, it really doesn't take much wind at all to cause, fire concerns. So especially grass fires and kind of the shrubs and that type of thing up in the foothills, we're going to be watching. Again, we won't have any red flag conditions necessarily, but just it's going to be so extremely dry, even though the winds are relatively light. Just any kind of spark or anything can set a fire off in these extreme dry conditions.
So if someone's listening to this right now, I imagine a lot of people wondering, like, where can I catch a break? Where can I go this weekend to get a little bit of relief? What are some of the relative cool spots within driving distance?
Yeah, the cooler areas definitely be over in the Bay Area. The closer to the coast, the better. It actually is still pretty warm. Even, you have to get all the way over to San Francisco and right in the Bay. It's going to be very warm still in the Delta. And, even Napa and Concord, those areas are still going to be pretty hot. They're kind of removed from the marine layer that's going to be coming in. But still, if you get right along the coast, there's going to be relief there, and the mountains will have some relief, although you're going to have to go up pretty high. You may have to go all the way up to Donner. Mm-hmm. It's going to be warm even at Lake Tahoe and even up, really below 5,000 feet, still going to be pretty warm. So.
Yeah, when it comes to, it's always just good to remind people. I mean, we hear the tips all the time, but really they're worth repeating when the weather gets this extreme. Can you just talk about some of the things to watch out for yourself and others during this really kind of sweltering heat stretch that we're going to embark on?
Yeah, really the big thing is just to avoid outdoor activity during those peak heating hours, between really any time after 3 p.m. up through 7 and even 8 o'clock. It's going to be very high. It's best just to avoid that period altogether and stay in the air conditioning. If you can't find air conditioning, maybe find a library or a mall or someplace that has air conditioning that you can get out of that for a time. Would definitely want to drink a lot of water, extra water, and stay hydrated if you must spend any time outside or even just inside. And it's going to be warm even a lot of, you know, for a lot of people indoors also. Definitely want to check on the elderly and the kids and pets, you know, people and pets that might be highly susceptible to this type of heat. Definitely want to keep an eye on them. So yeah, that's some of the best key things to do, I'd say.
Finally, summer is on Sunday and we're already dealing with these temperatures. What does this bode for the long-term forecast going into the summer across the valley and foothills?
Yeah, we are. Hopefully this pattern, you know, a lot of times we get in these patterns, we can get periodic heat waves. So the long-term forecast is actually for above normal temperatures through the summer. So there's definitely the potential that we could have a few more of these heat waves. Hopefully not as hot as this one. Again, this type of heat wave, you know, when we're getting up around 110, that's maybe only once or twice a year, really, that we have temperatures that are 110. So hopefully we've used up one of our times here, and maybe there'll only be one more. But I, you know, the pattern that we're in, it's just one that there's going to be a chance probably for some more heat waves. And this is pretty early in the season. So, you know, it'd be nice if we could change the pattern, get some troughs coming in and get some more delta breezes. But the long-term outlook is for above normal temperatures this summer.
Craig Shoemaker, senior meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Sacramento. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Well, you're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. All right, with that extreme heat that we're all going to embark on, you might just want to get away. And if so, there's some good news. Southwest Airlines announced a handful of new nonstop flights out of Sacramento. But with the state reopening on Tuesday, there are some things to be aware of if you travel in and out of Sac International. Joining us is Mark Haneke, Manager, Air Service of Development, Marketing, and Communications for Sacramento International Airport. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Good morning.
Well, Mark, let's begin with the latest on Southwest Airlines. It's been a bumpy week. There were several problems with the airline's computer systems. It really impacted thousands of travelers at the airport. What happened and where do we stand with those issues?
This is really an internal IT issue for Southwest Airlines. And so it's unfortunate they had a couple of back-to-back incidents that happened earlier in the week. And it does disrupt passengers' travel plans. Best that we can do as the airport is support the airline as much as possible, but ultimately the responsibility lies with the airline to reaccommodate those passengers. So we just appreciate the patience of the passengers as they got reaccommodated and hopefully en route to their final destination.
You know, California officially reopened for business on Tuesday. What have you been seeing in terms of travel traffic at the airport?
Yeah, well, our traffic is up substantially. We really saw it start to take off around March or so. And month to date for June, we're at over 80% compared to the same period in 2019. So we've really made a lot of progress in terms of recapturing some of that traffic and regrowth. So we're optimistic that it's going to be a busy summer.
You know, when we're talking just about businesses that are reopening and there's been staffing issues and people kind of urging patience with customers and just to take it easy on staff, how are the staffing levels at the airport given that you're just talking about a significant increase compared to last year?
Yeah, so we had to cut back on some of our services for our concessionaires, you know, the different restaurants and that sort of thing when the traffic levels were low. But now that they've been rebounding so quickly and so strongly, we have been encouraging our concessionaires to staff up, and they're making strides to open more options for our passengers as they go through. And even things like, for example, we have a couple of airport lounges, and those should be opening next month as well after, you know, a period of being closed due to the pandemic.
So the state just reopened on Tuesday. Someone's heading to the airport this weekend. What do they need to know when they walk in to the airport?
Right. So our rule is always, our guidance is to arrive at least 2 hours in advance, whether it's a domestic or international flight, just because the TSA lines are going to be very busy. Even if you have TSA through check, or we also just recently, a couple of months ago, added CLEAR, which is a trusted traveler program as well. So we have options for people. But considering the volume of passengers that are going through, right now, this month, we're averaging over 15,000 passengers a day. So the volumes have been pretty high. And like I said, it's over 80% compared to what it was in 2019. So that the rebound is quite strong.
What pandemic COVID-related rules are still in place? I mean, I would imagine you still got to bring your mask, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up. So the mask is a federal mandate, and that applies to passengers when they are in flight throughout on the aircraft. But that also applies to when they're in the airport terminals. So you don't need to wear your mask until you get up to the terminal. But once you're inside the terminal, through the check-in process, TSA, et cetera, all the way to the gate and boarding, you need to keep your mask on. And that's just for everybody's safety at this point. Now, that was extended through mid-September. And we'll wait and see what the federal government decides in terms of if they want to extend it further or relax some of those conditions after that point. But at least now through mid-September, definitely keep your mask on at all times.
That's good to know. I mean, for many people that are heading to the airport, they haven't even flown for about a year or even longer. And you're mentioning that some of the amenities and lounges are coming on board in the coming weeks. So I guess were any improvements or any new services added for travel over the past 15 months or so, so that will be different to them when they walk in?
You'll see a lot more signage, and there's more of the sanitation, like the hand wipes and that sort of thing throughout the terminals. And also in terms of social distancing, we still really encourage that in addition to the mask mandate. So please keep at least six feet apart. But otherwise, in terms of actual services, it's more or less a matter of bringing things back up to speed to where they were before. So we're encouraged by what we're seeing with that effort.
Do you still have COVID testing on site at the airport?
Yes, we do. Okay. Yeah. So it's right next to the AMPM mini mart as you enter the airport. And that is for rapid COVID testing for people, especially for people who are going to Hawaii, because that's still a requirement for Hawaii in particular. But yes, that is available.
And also, we just talked about new routes, which is exciting as people are planning their vacations. Can Southwest add some more nonstop flights? Can you expand on that?
Right. So just this past Thursday, Southwest announced that they'll be adding two daily flights to Palm Springs beginning in early October. And then they'll be adding a flight to Kona, Hawaii, on the Big Island beginning just before Christmas, December 18th. So we're really excited about that. And also a couple of the airlines have added additional flights like JetBlue to Cancun, which is operating three times a week on a year-round basis. So it just opens up a number of additional leisure-oriented markets for passengers. And one kind of fun fact, today is actually the 30th anniversary of Southwest Airlines flying to SMF. So we're going to have a party for Southwest staff here and some of our airport folks. So I'm dressed up for the party occasion. And then tomorrow is Southwest's 50th anniversary of actually being in existence. So it's a party week here, and we're celebrating Southwest. And they have over 50% share of our market here at the airport. So we're really happy to partner with them.
Yes, you have a very nice floral shirt on. Well, Sacramento, the airport, I mean, at Sacramento, I mean, it's really known for the ease of getting in and out of the airport. And the summer season is ramping up and you're still getting up to full speed. What is your message to passengers?
The core message is really arrive early and be patient. You know, people, like you mentioned, people are a little bit out of practice in terms of the travel process if they haven't flown for the last 12, 15 months. So we encourage them to get there early. Be sure to remember not to have liquids in your carry-on. Keep them below 3 fluid ounces, 100 milliliters. And just, you know, the TSA and the flight attendants and all of the airport staff are just following the guidelines of the federal government that are mandated. So please be cooperative and with them.
You know, on that note, I mean, there's been a good amount of news stories about, you know, passenger behavior. You know, we've seen and heard stories about passengers behaving badly on board planes and in terminals across the country and even here in California. What are the consequences of this kind of behavior and the impact on other passengers that are just, you know, kind of looking forward to getting back to normal and enjoying some traveling? Sure.
Yeah, well, the airlines are taking this extremely seriously. And when there are in-flight incidences, especially where planes have to divert to an alternate airport instead of their final destination, it is very costly for the airlines. And so passengers who disrupt these in these situations, they will be included on a no-fly list with that particular airline, likely for the rest of their life. So it's not really the time to kind of toot your own horn and have your own message, no matter what, whether you agree or disagree with the mask mandate. It's not the appropriate time to do that. So again, be cooperative, be pleasant, be cordial, be friendly, be neighborly with your other passengers as well, so that everybody can enjoy a positive experience.
Mark Haneke with Sacramento International Airport, thank you so much for joining us, and have a lot of fun with your Southwest anniversary celebrations this week.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Well, up next, we kick off a week of powerful reporting on the real life consequences of sexual assault, the broken justice system, and the healing process. You can join the conversation. Email us at insight@capradio.org or use the Twitter hashtag AskInsight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. Today on Insight, we begin a series of reports that tackle a very difficult, emotional, and scary topic, sexual assault. More specifically, how sexual assault survivors find a path to healing, even when justice isn't served. Cap Radio reporters Sammy Kaola and Emily Zentner have spent nearly 2 years looking into the immediate aftermath of sexual violence, asking questions like, why do so few assault cases go to trial? Why is there a backlog for processing DNA evidence from rapes in California? What does it feel like for a survivor to tell a police officer or even a friend about an assault and to not be believed? All of those questions and more get answered in their 7-part podcast series. It's called After the Assault. During the course of their reporting, you'll meet women searching for strength and legal resolution amid trauma, experts looking at the cracks at a law enforcement system that rarely yields rape convictions or even charges, detectives trying to solve some of the most difficult cases on their desks, and community advocates pushing for a future where survivors feel heard and empowered. We begin our coverage on Insight with Donna Appadoni, who hosts Morning Edition and Cap Radio Reads. She spoke with Grace Talusan about her experiences with sexual assault. And as you're about to hear, the annual arrival of house guests was a horrifying event for Grace, who as a child was regularly assaulted by one of the visitors. She also writes about her experiences as a Filipina immigrant. Community advocates say survivors of color are even less likely to speak up about sexual violence. Her memoir, The Body Papers, takes readers into the dark times of her childhood, only some of which she can actually remember. as well as loving time she shared with her parents and other family members. We do want to advise that some of the content you're about to hear may not be appropriate for audiences. Here now is Donna Appadoni with author Grace Talusan.
I want to talk about your grandfather coming for an extended visit from the Philippines to the U.S. and stayed with your family for a summer at first and then subsequent visits after that. Your grandmother was also visiting at the same time?
Yes, and I forgot that she was, because in my mind, she wasn't there. And I realized by looking at photographs that she was. So I think it is a memoir, so it is my writing based on my memory. But I thought, because I've done some magazine writing, I wanted to bring in some researched material and some techniques that I used with long form reporting. And so I did archival research. I looked at hundreds of photographs, and it was fascinating because there's a story in my head, and there's a story that the documents and photographs and other pieces tell. And it was different from my memory, which is also fascinating to think about. Like, why do we tell ourselves stories in particular ways? What is the purpose of that? So I needed to erase my grandmother from the narrative, because that's also another cognitive dissonance. Like, wait, how could my grandfather be doing that to me for 7 years every night when his wife was sleeping next to him? And so that's what I had to grapple with.
It's a lot to grapple with. Tell us what you can, what feels comfortable to you about what was happening.
So, you know, it was a very repetitive experience. And so what I remember is very, it's not like I don't have access to the memories, but I just think I only have a couple of memories that stand out because it was such a repetitive experience. So my grandfather sexually abused me from the ages for 7 years. So, and it was anytime that he was at our house, he did it. So it was, you know, years and years, you know, hundreds of times. And so I don't remember all of it, but I do know that it was a pretty repetitive, invasive experience. And, you know, it's hard for me to even think about, like, because I know there's children in my life, and when they hit the age of seven, which I was when it started, it's really hard for me to take that in and to look at them and say, wow, that's what seven is. And that's when it started for me. And, you know, how could I ever blame myself? I was so little. I didn't, there's like very little I was conscious of or aware of. And, you know, so it's, but yeah, that's what it was. It was happened mostly at night. But there were times when if he found me alone, he would definitely attack me also. And it was quite relentless and also confusing, because there was that experience of him as a offender, perpetrator. But then there was also this other experience of him that my friends knew, that that anyone else in my life knew, which was a very quiet man who had a big garden in the backyard and was seemingly nice to people. You know, so it was confusing in that way.
Especially when you're 7 years old, because it's seven, I mean, we call it that, the age of reason, but at seven, you're really not sure what's what, and you accept everything as truth, you accept so much as fact, and this must have been a very confusing thing. Did you have any sense, from what you've written, from the way you're talking about it, there certainly was a sense of not wanting to be involved in that. But was there a sense of right or wrong involved at that early age? Do you remember?
I mean, I forgot about that notion of seven as being the age of reason. And, you know, the thing is I did try to make sense of it. But because I was alone in this sense making and meaning making, I was wrong. So the sense that I made of it was I was also in Sunday school. And so somehow I put in my mind a religious context that I must have sinned. I must be getting punished by God for doing something. And I wasn't even sure what that thing would be, but I just thought, oh, I'm being punished right now from God. That's what this is. And that was the reasoning I had. And then when a teacher asked me, she'd noticed that something had changed about me substantially from one day to the next. And when she asked me about it, I also had enough, I guess, reasoning at that time to make a decision. And I thought, oh, no. If he's doing something that's going to put him in jail, and I can't stand the idea of him being in jail, so I'm going to protect him. And so there's this way that, as twisted as it is, I am able to be the like agent of change, or I'm able to feel stronger because I've made a decision to protect him. You know, it's not like I thought about it that hard. These are things that happened in a split second. But when I reflect on it, that's what I see is, you know.
But going back to your grandfather visiting, and you as still a very young person, still a child, it would be too easy for anyone listening to this to say, where were her parents? But that's part of what happens. Part of that is someone on his part who is savvy enough to keep this away from everybody else. You have a very loving, very alert, very very aware family, but it was hidden.
Yes.
What was the reaction when they found out? And how did they find out?
Well, I told them. Ended the abuse, or I did something to make it stop. And it took me probably another year until I was able to tell my parents, even though I thought about it all the time and I wanted to tell them. And I wasn't able to tell them. I just couldn't get the guts up to say it. You know, and when I did tell them, they immediately acted. It was late at night. They called the relative where my grandfather was currently staying. They called her right away and told her. And I wasn't privy to all the details of what happened, but I know that everybody in the family, my parents made sure everybody knew about it. And there were consequences. Like, my extended family wasn't really able to hear it at the time. And we were estranged for years. And, you know, I experienced that as, I felt really bad about it. I thought, oh, you know, it's my fault that we're not in touch with my family, and I'm such a problem. But, you know, I'm really proud that my parents chose me. And they told me that all the time. They said, you know, we're going to stand by you. And they were sorry about what had happened. They didn't know. And, you know, people will still ask, like, how could they not know? But, you know, you'll see this repeated over and over again in all kinds of situations. We get locked into a family dynamic. We are trying to survive, and we probably don't see things that we can't see, or we don't, you know, I don't know. We have all kinds of defenses, but once it was directly brought to their attention, my parents acted. And even now, with the book coming out, there's a way that they rallied and told me, you know, if you need us to protect you about this, we're here. And, you know, my mother, she came to me, traveled with me, and almost went to every event. And she still comes to my events, even though she's seen dozens of them already. She wants me to know that she's there for me. And I think she feels bad because when I was a child going through this, she wasn't able to be there. She wasn't aware of it. And so she's trying to make amends. And I think that's what can be really beautiful about life is there's opportunity for that. We don't have to write somebody off. We can make some room for forgiveness, especially if they are trying to do the work of asking for it and making amends and trying something different.
That was Grace Taliusson, author of The Body Papers, talking with Donna Appadoni for CAP Radio Reads. You can hear the full hour-long interview at capradio.org/reads or wherever you get your podcasts. The aftermath of an assault can be confusing and chaotic, so we built a step-by-step guide for reporting a sexual assault in Sacramento County, plus a glossary of terms and a directory of community groups in place to help survivors, whether they choose to report or not. You can find it posted starting Monday at capradio.org/afterTheAssault. Still ahead, we're going to end our week on a high note and get you in the mood for summer with the preview of CAP Radio's summer concert series. Jennifer Reason joins us next. You can join the conversation too. Email us at insight@capradio.org or use the Twitter hashtag AskInsight. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. The COVID pandemic changed a lot of things, especially for the arts community. We have been reporting on the struggles for a long time now, but we've also heard the stories of anticipation and a desire to welcome crowds back into theaters, museums, and music halls. Now that California has officially reopened for business, one can hope that those venues will once again be filled with music, art, and performance-loving patrons. Here at CAP Radio, our own music department has faced similar challenges. Our holiday music series, which was scheduled around Christmas, it didn't happen. But now the creative minds behind CAP Radio Music have found a creative way to get you into the sounds of summer, socially distant, of course, and bring joy into your home. Starting tomorrow, we're going to debut CAP Radio's Summer Concert Series. It's a series of one-hour radio specials, and you can actually watch the concerts, too, as they've been recorded on video as well. We have so much good music lined up for you, and we are just thrilled to have the host of the summer concert series, Jennifer Reason on Insight, to share all of the great music with us here today. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me, Vicki.
Well, before we dive into the music, just tell us about how CAP Radio came up with the summer concert series and how you produced it in a socially distant manner.
Sure. I mean, I think you've just nailed it on the head. We have been totally void of arts, of music making together, of live performance. And I think we're all just kind of hyper aware of what a gaping hole that's left in all of our lives. So we thought, my God, we can do something. Surely we can at least bring some wonderful local artists here, record them, and at least give our listeners that little taste. We recorded live in the garden, so it was very safe. We waited until the station was closed. We came in on the weekends, and we put a couple performers at a time out in the garden, and everyone was masked, of course, until it was time to be filmed or time to play their wind instrument, as it were. And yeah, we just recorded and produced 6 live shows right from the CAP Radio Garden, and those will be broadcasted live. The videos will be available digitally as well. And it's as close as we can get, I think, to enjoying local live music together.
And I'm so happy you recorded it too, because the Cap Radio Garden is such a treat.
Yes, it's so pretty us. Out there.
It really is. Yeah, Jennifer, you're also a musician by training. And, you know, we have covered so much about how difficult the past year has been for musicians and artists. I guess, how has the year been for you and your colleagues this past year?
Yeah, you know, it's the year kind of feels non-existent. I think the arts in particular was a community that was just absolutely decimated. It just disappeared. It went away. I lost every show I had lined up for over 12 months. Three tours, poof, gone. You know, where the theaters have been dark for over a year. All of my colleagues, we just have not done anything. Our careers and our life's work kind of just evaporated. So we've been struggling really hard to keep the dream alive, to keep the mission alive, to find avenues to still make our music while surviving. You know, that's a loss of income as well. So it's just been insane. So hopefully this does a little something for listener and artist alike.
Oh, I'm sure it will. I mean, just the overdue, long overdue joy that y'all are about to kick off. So let's just begin with the concert that starts tomorrow, Friday, June 18th. This performance is a tribute to Juneteenth, correct?
Yeah, you know, it actually worked out perfectly. The Chevalier Quartet is coming in with special guest Deborah Pittman. They actually formed for something totally separate from Juneteenth. They formed to kind of highlight Black composers, in particular one, Joseph Bologna Chevalier de Saint-Georges, which is their namesake. And he was a very neglected Black composer in the 1700s when there just weren't Black men trying to write classical music. So they're trying to educate the world about neglected composers like that. So I thought, wow, what a perfect first guest for our series. We will dovetail it right into Juneteenth. They'll have an encore performance on Juneteenth and just really bring a highlight to all of these very deserving, amazing composers that we haven't heard of.
The strings are just, I mean, magical. And I just love even more that they're from, as you were talking about, neglected Black composers spanning, what, the last two centuries?
Yes, exactly. Their program will cover about 200 years of neglected composers. And just a string quartet out in the garden, too. It was just magical.
You also have a second concert. This one is June 25th. And you perform in this one as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on piano, luckily enough for me, because there's two powerhouse vocalists joining me, a veteran performer, Carrie Hennessy, and a rising star tenor Taylor Thompson. So it's really a gorgeous juxtaposition of old and new. We've got African American composers on this. We've got the rock solid canon, Schumann, you know, Puccini, Amy Beach. So it's a gorgeous, gorgeous balance.
And that is Carrie Hennessy, who's a soprano, but Taylor Thompson is a tenor. And I want to give some time for her as well, if we can play that.
Die Rose, die Lilie, die Taube, die Sonne, die Liebte, sei Sonne, liebes Wonne. Ich lieb sie nicht mehr, ich liebe alleine, die Kleine, die Feine, die Reine, die Eine. Sie selber alle, liebes Wonne, und Rose und Lilie und Taube und Sonne.
Ich lieb alleine die Kleine, die Feine, die Reine, die Eine, die Eine.
Jennifer, that kind of juxtaposition must have been so much fun for you.
Yes,
on the piano.
It's so much fun because I have a degree in classical music and I know all of the standard composers, but these artists are introducing me to composers I haven't even been exposed to. And it's just been so much fun to dig into all the greatness that's out there.
All right, well, let's continue on. Concert 3, this one airs July 2nd, correct?
Yes, exactly.
So it's Brennan Milton who's on clarinet, correct?
Yeah, Brennan Milton, Carol Chang on piano. And this is so fun, too, because we have the standards. We have living American and Japanese composers. Brennan is so fabulous. He also designs concert wear and sews it himself. So it's gorgeous. He plays clarinet and flute on this concert. So it's a really lovely performance.
And I was just reading, in addition to having a passion for designing clothes, Milton has been invited to Carnegie Hall twice.
Yes.
Wow.
So we'll hear all about that as well. He's really a rock star. So many rock stars in Sacramento. So this is fun.
Well, let's move on to the next rock star, the concert that airs on July 9th.
Yes. So this is very special. This is two local pianists, both affiliated with Sacramento State University. It's Sakurako Kanemitsu and Arena Saito. Both of these wonderful women have kind of created a program to speak in a very elegant way, I think, to the violence that's been happening against the Asian community. So this is kind of just a musical tribute to that problem.
And that was Fantasia for Nausicaa, correct?
Yeah.
And there's a second one, R Street?
R Street. And this is actually written by a professor of piano at Sac State. And it is capturing R Street as in Sacramento's R Street.
I just love the diversity of music with that you're profiling throughout the summer.
Thank you.
The next concert is July 16th.
Yeah, something totally different. These are Sacramento natives coming from Las Vegas back home, basically. And it's a gorgeous harp and flute duo. The harp underneath the kiwi bowers in the garden was just to die for. So I hope we get to do that in person soon. But lovely music celebrating gardens.
I can feel the garden.
Can't you? I know.
I really can. The bees and, you know, the pollinating.
Bees, pollen, wind, trains.
I want to give enough time for the last one because you're part of the final concert as well.
Yeah. And this is actually a perfect full circle. It comes back to what we were talking to at the top of this segment, and that is what artists have been through during the pandemic. This program is really a journey for artists. It speaks to each element of the pandemic, and it's got living composers and the canon. And I think it'll be meaningful to anyone listening.
What a wonderful way to end the week, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Jennifer Reason with Cap Radio and the Cap Radio Summer Concert Series, which kicks off this tomorrow.
Right? I know, it's finally here. Tomorrow at noon.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about all of our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. We're going to catch you back here on Monday.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.